The Day the World Ended by Sax Rohmer. Chapter 1. I am given 3 days.
Brian Woodville!
I sat up in my bed with a start. Pitch darkness prevailed in my apartment. But staring intently out of the alcove in the direction of the half-shuttered windows, I could just discern a faint difference in the gloom. Beyond was the balcony, beyond that the gardens. I reached up for a hanging switch and lighted my bedside lamp. The room was empty. No sound was audible except a distant rippling from the little stream at the foot of the gardens and the intimate ticking of my wristwatch. I raised my pajama sleeve and glanced at the dial. Just 3 o'clock. Silence. Emptiness. Yet, a cold, commanding voice had called me by name. Or had I dreamed? Dreamed vividly.
Brian Woodville!
This time I was not dreaming. I leaped out of bed in a flash, my heart beating rapidly. With concrete things, I can cope moderately well. But this voice, the voice of one not a yard removed, was frankly, starkly, something out of another world. My mode of life had trained me to action, and, conscious of a sensation which I can only suppose presaged hysteria, I did what anybody else would have done. Knowing it to be useless, beside the point, I searched everywhere, feverishly. I tried the door. It was locked. I ran to the French windows, raised the shutters fully, and looked out on the deserted balcony. Not a soul was in sight. But as I re-entered,
Brian Woodville,
said the cold, inexorable voice, apparently at my elbow. You have 3 days. You will leave Baden-Baden within that time. This is the first warning. You have 3 days. The voice ceased. I dropped into an armchair beside the writing table. Perhaps this unfamiliar tension in my head had meant that I wanted to scream. Frankly, I think now that I did. Either I was at last face to face with what is loosely termed the supernatural, or I was going mad. Action of some sort I had found to be the only antidote to panic of any sort. There was a bottle of whiskey and some soda on the table. I brewed a drink. With exaggerated care and coolness, I filled and lighted my pipe. I had 3 days. For 5, 10, 15 minutes, I sat there considering the mystery from every conceivable angle. One thing was certain. Either it had been the product of some form of hypnotism with which I was not acquainted, or it had been produced by means of apparatus concealed in my apartment. I began an examination of the floors, walls, and furniture in search of A, a speaking tube, B, a radio fitting, but I found nothing. Dawn was stealing Wanley? I don't know, through the slats of my shutters when at last I gave up. What did it mean? How the warning had been conveyed to me, I simply cannot imagine. But that it was associated with my mission, equally I could not doubt. That mission, which I had undertaken so lightly. I had counted my Brazil expedition in quest of a white race said to survive far up a tributary of the Rio Negro. Perilously enough, God knows. For although at last I had got back, it was more by good luck than good management. Then there was the Sahara trek, fairly risky but successful. And now, when the Daily World had invited me to go to the Black Forest, professional zest and personal inclination both urged and acceptance. There was no danger attached to a holiday in these fruitful valleys. Tonight I had been disillusioned. I badly needed a rest, this was true. And the subject came within my province. In short, said the powers behind the Daily World, this was clearly indicated as my job. I had undertaken it, and I had 3 days. That most gruesome of all superstitions known to man, vampires, had reappeared in Germany. The details were few and conflicting. A peasant had been found dead in the forest, exhibiting extraordinary symptoms of emaciation. Animals also, and even birds. A number of witnesses spoke of a giant bat hovering over the trees. The locale it had proved impossible to trace more exactly than it would. Oh, I have to read that sentence again. The locale it had proved impossible to trace more exactly than that it was in the Black Forest. Armed with all the known facts I had set out, and now found myself living, hitherto very pleasantly, in the charming garden of Baden-Baden. Thus far, I had made little or no headway. There seemed to be a damnable conspiracy of silence among the people most likely to be of help. Few denied having heard the stories, but none seemed prepared to enlarge upon them. Several persons whom I spoke to crossed themselves and abruptly changed the subject. Was everyone who knew anything afraid to speak? If so, why? I had asked myself that question so recently as the previous evening. The voice in the night perhaps had answered it. You have 3 days. A waiter I had not seen before brought my breakfast. In the scented beauty and sunshine, it was hard to recapture the horror of the night. As he stepped out on the balcony, shuddering a laden tray, "Good morning, sir," he greeted me cheerfully. "Good morning," I returned, and watched him deftly arranging my light as we passed upon the white cloth. During the restless hours which had intervened between the coming of that bodiless voice and sunrise, I had been thinking hard. I had bidden goodbye to the amused carelessness with which, thus far, I had regarded the Black Forest mission. Brazil had nearly put paid to my account, and I had stood fairly near the edge of beyond in the Sahara. But here, in a modern, fashionable town, I was up against something worse than fever, cataracts, and poisoned arrows, something harder to dodge than Arab bullets, something very insidious, its worst element being that I didn't know my enemies. "I'm hoping," I went on casually, "for a glimpse of one of the giant bats which I hear have been seen in this neighborhood." Those words had an electrical effect. The man perceptibly paused in his labors, but, quickly recovering himself, he set down the coffee pot and, resting his hands on the table, looked into my eyes. "If you took my advice, sir," he said earnestly, "you would leave those things alone." "Why?" I challenged. He stood upright, bowed, and, "It is just my advice, sir," he said, smiled, bowed again, and went out. "Extraordinary fellow," I muttered. This constant evasion was getting on my nerves. Hitherto it had merely provoked me, but after the inexplicable episode of the night, it began to assume a more sinister character. I felt lonely, and it was a different kind of loneliness from any loneliness I had known before. My plans for the day were vague. Where should I start? Whom could I question? One definite change I made when I presently set out for Hohen Baden. I had a well-tried Colt repeater on my hip. It seemed absurd, in that pleasure valley under smiling skies, I had roamed the byways of Fez at midnight. I had returned to my quarters in Timbuktu under a setting moon, unarmed. Yet here I was, with merry German holiday markers about me, carrying a cargo of live shells. However, I had no occasion to use them. Feeling rather a fool, and asking myself again and again, couldn't the warning have been an unusually vivid dream? I returned late in the afternoon to the Regal. I had seen nothing, and I had learned nothing. One lunches early, but dined late in Baden-Baden. Tonight, I was one of the latest. But the head waiter had my table reserved. Having fared well, but sparingly, I found him at my elbow. "Everything satisfactory, sir?" he asked. I looked up and his blue eyes met my inquiring stare unflinchingly. I had questioned Fritz and had met with the usual evasions. "Quite," I replied. The long, softly lighted dining room was nearly deserted. In a nearby lounge, the hotel orchestra played a Slovak dance. Fritz was of Prague, a great commercial center today, but of old capital of the witch country. Bohemia still cherishes vampires, and I thought he knew why Fritz was reticent. But I did not know why his gaze wandered so strangely. I stared out of the window as he was singing. Beautiful gardens, unreally lovely in the dusk. Unreally lovely in the dusk, backed by magically shattered ribbons laid before me. I could hear the laughing song of that tiny stream, crossed by a floral bridge almost directly in front of the window in which my table was set, of which those famous blue trout are brought fresh to the dining room. Then I saw a tall, sinuous figure, shirt was watching Mademoiselle Bieber. Certainly she was worthy of inspection. For my own part, I like a woman to be slender. There is a point at which the slender becomes definitely domain. I vision the lack of nuances known to a Jacob Eckstein, but I must confess that I looked upon Mademoiselle Bieber as me. She was svelte between my feet, and if good taste is beauty, she was beautiful. She was graceful, white skin, had thin but very red lips and perfect teeth. Her eyes certainly were magnificent. And she was along the path to the spirit, training her own father's guard, and her own walking wheels, glanced aside, saw her in the beauty, and she was really great. Her very sound, she made her own mind seem possessed, and her voice was the wish to be and her eyes were turning, I saw the prince in the act of opening his attention. No, I said, smiling. I was not turned the head by any. He started, then dropped his shoulders on the floor, and remained in the bottle of meat. The wheelie swam and then disappeared. I never once saw him in the head of his mouth. Wish! Yes, I murmured reflectively. I suppose she is. I lost myself for a while in meditation, and when I returned to realities, Fritz had left me.